You're listening to The Songwriter's Diary. My name is Makuka. Today's episode features Arjuna Oaks, who is a Wellington-based singer, songwriter, and producer. Welcome to The Songwriter's Diary, Arjuna.
Thank you for having me.
Ooh, I'm really excited to be chatting to you today.
Oh, likewise. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I've never done a podcast before, so this will be cool.
This is your first podcast.
This is my first time, yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, I hope you have a good experience. So for some of our listeners who may not have heard of you, please, in your own words, tell us what you do and how you do it.
Sure thing. Well, I am a musician based in Wellington, Aotearoa. I grew up in Auckland. I've been playing music my entire life. I'm a pianist, a singer-songwriter, composer, a performer, I've been writing music for quite a long time and been releasing the last couple of years and play festivals and gigs and compose sometimes for theater shows and, do lots of stuff. Just try and be creative and have fun, really. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. How did you get to composing for theater shows?
Well, that was a one-time thing, which I hope to do more of. I got to, through a friend of mine, I got to compose for a theatre show that was really in depth and very cerebral and very interesting and really helped me to further my own production and composing skills. And it's a long time dream of mine to compose for film. So that's kind of a bit of a first step for me.
And you said that you started making music when you were younger. Mm-hmm. Listening to your music, you could tell that that music just flows out of you easily. Like, it's sort of the way, it's part of the way you think and process life.
Music has always been a very important part of my life and an amazing way for me to express myself, I think. I've always been around music. My parents both play guitar and sing. My grandparents love music. So there was always music playing around the house when I was a kid. And it seemed like the natural way for me to be able to express myself and to be myself. And I always felt very comfortable in front of people performing music. I was singing when I was, a toddler and was playing piano by the time I was 7. And I was performing before that. So I've always felt very comfortable performing and even writing and improvising. It's just been a kind of a part of who I am. And I'm very, very lucky that I get to have a passion like this that I can express myself through and help to live, essentially, you know, in more than one sense of the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, most musicians that I know of, they normally say have a full-time job as doing something else that's not music, and then they realize that, okay, I want to do music full-time. Was that the same for you, or did you always know that music was it, and was that your first job?
I count myself very lucky that I've always known I wanted to be a musician, except for a little period of time where I wanted to be a film director, but that wasn't going to work out, or a train driver when I was 5.
Oh.
But a little bit more realistic than a musician, actually. But I was always wanting to be a musician, I think, and especially when I was a teenager and I was starting to write music and getting more into jazz and into improvisation, that I really knew that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I think it's mainly because I've always felt this creative urge, not just for music, but for other things too. And so if I can be close to that, I always gives me, you know, a sense of well-being and worth.
So you never had a cafe job or worked at the warehouse or anything
No, that would be like kind of better if I did. I mean, like, because it'd be better backstory. No, I'm joking.
No.
So after high school, so I was gigging throughout high school. I did a lot of corporate gigs, did a lot of just busking and that kind of thing and gigs for school and what have you and public events as well. And then I went to university in Auckland for a couple of years to study jazz. And while I was doing that, I started teaching piano at Otada Music and Arts Center. Shout out to OMAC. which I really, really loved, and I teach piano to this day. So I suppose that's kind of like my day job, but and it's still music, and I still really, really enjoy it. So it's and it's rewarding in its own different way.
Yeah.
I suppose the closest thing is busking. Like I did a lot of busking, even just a couple of years ago, not that long ago, I was doing tons of busking out in the street and just, you know, sometimes it was great, sometimes it was horrible. Like,
oh no, I think that's awesome because a lot of artists, especially independent artists and also upcoming artists like myself, our dream is to make music full time. Whether that's performing or teaching music or making music in whatever form. And I think it's pretty cool that since high school you've been in the music space up until now.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky that I've known some of the right people to help me through that process. You know, it wasn't all just kind of whatever hard work and talent, but I am I'm very very happy that I've never had to have a job, a retail job or something like that, you know, so it's nice.
Was there a moment where you knew you wanted to be a singer and songwriter, like a performing artist, or is that something that just happened as you were gigging and at uni?
I've been singing before I played piano. So when I started playing piano when I was 7, it was always one of the main objectives of it was to sing and play piano, to back myself with the piano. And then kind of quite gradually, I started to write songs as a teenager and perform those songs and realized quite quickly that I wasn't content playing other people's music, even though I love other people's music, but I always had this, you know, maybe rather selfishly, but urge to make it my own, you know, if it was other, you know, I wanted to change the music to make it feel like me more. And when you're writing music and you're performing that music, there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's your music. You can do it however you want. You could even do it different to how you recorded it. You know, there was, I think, just so much freedom in being a songwriter and a composer because it's not about being good or bad. It's about being yourself, you know?
Yeah. And you have that room to play.
Yeah, you have that room to play. And, you know, any kind of music is not subjective, but especially songwriting, because it's just, it's an expression of yourself, your life, things that you are very passionate about and want to express. And nobody can take that away from you. So that's always been a comfort to me and something I've always thought about, and it's just magical.
Well, that's a really good word for it, magical.
It is making magic. It's also sharing humanity and sharing a piece of your life or other people's lives, or, you know, it's sharing what it is to be a human being. And I think also that's what music can do and should do. And I think that's why sometimes I get quite annoyed when music is only a commercial kind of commodity, that those opportunities for it to be something that is kind of a societal good and a mental health good and whatever, and that becomes lost when it's only for money. And it also connects to what we're about to talk about, recovery part two, new project, is my belief that music is an important part of healing and should be embraced more. I think music therapy is amazing, and how people have attached so much of their lives to music. And, you know, if they hear a song, you know, you think about that time in your life that you heard that song heaps and everything around it. And I just think that's so incredible and powerful. And so music can really reflect healing and help people to heal and help people to feel to you know, it can be cathartic. It can help people to really navigate through their lives in a positive way.
Yeah No, that's true. Like it's really cliche, but music is healing. Every day I wake up, especially during lockdown, every day I woke up really anxious, and what I did was go outside, put on some music and go for a walk.
Yep.
And that healed me for the day until the next morning, and I did it again.
I do something very similar.
Yeah. You know, going through lockdown, the arts industry or the entertainment industry has been affected a lot. It's amazing that the thing that carried most of us through lockdown was art. It was Netflix, it was films, it was movies, it was music, mm-hmm. It was shows, series. And we as listeners need to support musicians more and the creative space more. And whether that means when there's a show on, see if you can go and support. The creative space has suffered a lot during the pandemic.
It has. It's something that came to my mind while you were saying that, is that I think that we need to reward and reward, but also support the artists in whatever discipline. We need to support them for undertaking larger, kind of more meaningful projects. I think at the moment, the music industry is so caught up in this thing with social media where it's a content creator. You've got to create content to stay relevant with people, with your fans, which I find interesting. Of course, I play into that a bit because you have to at this day and age. You do, yeah. But in an ideal world, you shouldn't have to, because a lot of that content, especially when it's produced so fast and doesn't really have a lot of meaning, it's kind of like, you know, your time could be spent making something that's actually really meaningful and is going to touch someone and is going to make a difference in at least one person's life, you know, rather than something that's just there and then it's gone. And I think we're prioritizing the wrong thing. It's like with social media in general, it prioritizes clicks and it prioritizes your kind of immediate attention and the kind of rush that you get from a notification or the rush from something, which is so totally kind of too in the moment, where things that take longer and often have a bigger reward are left out. So I'm a big believer in supporting artists in a way that doesn't force them to release stuff that they're maybe not happy with or that they doesn't have a lot of meaning for them, and support them the way that they want to be supported, you know. So I think going to shows, you know, if people have Patreon or have band camps where you can buy their music, or streaming just doesn't pay anything. So
No. And, you know, it's really surprising. I think only music makers understand how much streaming doesn't pay. I think listeners who don't make music, I don't think they necessarily have all the info that we have.
Yeah, yeah. They see your song and it's like got 100,000 streams. They're like, cool, wow, they're making it. Awesome.
Mm.
They don't know you're getting hardly anything for that 100,000 streams. And they also don't know that if you get put on a playlist on Spotify or whatever, sure, it's cool and it might rack up you some streams, but it doesn't necessarily add to an actual fan base or to career opportunities or to any kind of, like, you know, it doesn't really do much, you know. So they, you know, I think it's tough for artists sometimes, especially when they're perceived doing well, maybe, and they don't feel that way. In my head, I just try and, not lack of a better word, not give a shit as much about it, because you know, as much as I need to sustain myself career wise so I can keep making music and keep making music I want to make, I also just have to shut it off and go, look, doesn't matter if no one likes this, as long as I'm proud of it and as long as it's something that touches me and feels true to me, then I'll share it, you know.
Yeah, and because a lot of work goes into it.
Yeah, a lot of work goes into it, and it's so easy to just release this music that you've put so much work into it and though no one hears it, and you feel really, really bad about it. And that's been you know, a big thing for me over the last couple of years releasing music, you know, putting all this time and effort and thinking, oh, this is going to be, everyone's going to love this, and you don't get the result you desire. Mm. You know, you got to not let it affect you, got to not let it get you down. You know, you just have to keep going, keep going. And at the end of the day, if one person, like I've had this a few times now where people have reached out to me and said how much their music means to me, that's the reward. Doesn't matter if a million people love your music. If one person comes to you and says that song, like, you know, really, really resonated with me or changed my life or helped me for the better, that's the real honor.
You know? If you can help one person do something, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's really beautiful, and it's a human connection, human experience, you know.
But it would also be nice to get $1 million after that as well.
Yeah.
Just saying. Oh. Yeah. So for listeners who would like to support you, how do you as an artist want to be supportive, or how can we support you better as your fans?
Well, coming to shows, I think, you know, obviously people shouldn't just go to shows because they feel a duty to go and support someone. They should go to a show because they want to go to a show and they want to experience it. I'd say about me, and I say more about us, because when I play live, I often play, not all the time, but I often play with my band, who are a bunch of incredible young musicians who I'm so proud of and happy to play with. And they, when you see us live, we're very creative and improvising a lot and communicating a lot and just having a really fun time. And it's very different to my kind of recorded output. It's quite a totally different experience. So I hope when people see us live that they get immersed in the experience, you know. Live shows, when you sell out a show or get quite a few people to your gig, it feels really good. But buying on Bandcamp is great too, and buying physical stuff as well.
It's almost like you don't want to beg people to come to your shows, but it's like, can you please come? Like, I need you.
Yeah.
Like, this is how we make money.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's different where you go as well, where there's more of a culture of going out and going to shows. Like in Wellington, it seems like there is more of a culture to go about going to gigs, because the city is so much smaller that people can get to gigs easier. And then that is generally, you know, how you support bands, as you go and you see them live. In Auckland, it doesn't seem so much like that. And also because Auckland is a bit more of a business city in a way, that it's not quite as connected to that kind of community approach. But I think people should go to shows. If they like an artist and they want to support them, then they should go to shows, you know, instead of just waiting to see them at a festival or waiting to go to a free gig that someone's putting on with them on, you know, just go and see them, you know, pay 20 or 30 bucks or whatever it is. You might whinge about how much $30 is, but really it's like, it's, if it's for two or three bands, that's $10 a band. Like, come on. You know, it's nothing really.
I'd love for you to tell us about firstly your EP and also the process that you went through to record this EP.
Sure. Well, this EP, Recovery Part 2, is a direct follow-up to another EP that I released called Recovery Part 1 that I released November of 2020. And so at the beginning of 2020, before COVID was even a whisper in the wind, really, and before our lives got turned upside down, me and my band went into a studio and recorded 12 songs in 2 days. And we did it all live. So at that point, I was in love with my band. I was loving how we were sounding. And I just wanted to capture that kind of spontaneity and that real kind of energy that we were getting on stage. So I wanted that. I didn't care if it was overly produced or whatever. I just wanted that essence. And so we went in there, did 12 songs in 2 days, and were very, very happy with all of the songs, really. And so then began a slow process of refining certain elements of the songs, adding little bits of production, and then released half or kind of, you know, five of the songs as Recovery Part 1 in the end of 2020. And then last year I was planning to release Recovery Part 2, but me and my friend CJ, aka Cerebi, released a project together, which I'm very, very proud of, called First Nights. And so that was being released and I kind of wanted to give Recovery Part 2 its own time. So I pushed it back even further. And now it is finally being released. By the time it comes out 4th of Feb, that would have been almost exactly 2 years since it was recorded, because I think we did it on the 3rd of Feb of 2020. So that's quite cool, actually, that it's, you know, and what for me, what's special, even though it's quite old and, you know, I've kind of moved on musically, the music to me still holds so much weight and I still love it and it's still great for me, you know, I still, so that's cool. So some of these songs that we recorded for Recovery Part 1 and Part 2 were kind of written a year to 2 to 3. Some, I think one of them I wrote in high school, like 6 years before we recorded them. So they kind of, but the songs were written at different times before that recording process, and then kind of just went in and got them all there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful EP, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so
it's
much.
Amazing. I think I've said this to you before. I feel your music more than I listen to it. I hope you get what I mean.
I totally get what you mean. That's like the biggest compliment ever.
Yeah. 1/4 is my favorite song.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. When I first heard it, I literally said, I'm going to save this song for a time when I'm crying so I can listen to it as I cry.
Oh, that's such an honor. Oh my gosh. Yes. I love like listening to sad songs and bawling my eyes out. It's the best thing ever. It's so cathartic. So when I wrote that song, I did kind of think this would be a great song to cry to. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. So cool.
Oh, that's so
That
sweet.
Is so cool. Yeah. No, like I think, I don't know what it is about the song. Maybe you can tell me, but it guides my feelings. Like it sort of like validates my feelings.
Cool.
There we go. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it holds a very special place in my heart because that song is kind of one of the rare love songs that I've written. I don't usually write love songs often. I've written a couple now, but that was kind of one of the only like full-on romantic songs, I suppose, because when I wrote that song, I just met my now partner of 2.5, nearly 3 years, and I was in love, so I just wrote a love song and it was nice. And what's very special about that recording of it, similar to another song off Recovery Part 2, which As I Am, which is just out, which I just went and recorded by myself live on the piano and singing. And that was that song. The only the first verse was planned and the rest of it was improvised. Same with 1/4, is that the first verse was written, but none of the rest of the lyrics was written in melody really for the bridge. So I improvised it all in one take. And my girlfriend Sarah was seated like just on the other side of the piano. And then you can hear my voice wavering at the end because I'm crying and she's crying and we're like, and then you can hear a laugh right at the end of the recording. So it's very special because it's imbued with all of that spirit, you know?
Yeah. No, you can definitely hear that because both those songs sound free.
Mm.
They both sound like, they don't sound calculated.
Cool. That's good.
Yeah. They just sound free as they are and they just float in whatever space you listen to them in.
Yep. That's awesome. That's definitely the way they were recorded and written, to be free and spontaneous and just a raw kind of representation of someone at that time. And in this case, me, but like it's not really about me. It's about a universal feeling about a feeling that other people can latch on to and understand and feel validated, because I think that in our society we're very easy to put down anything that's kind of raw and authentic if it's not intellectually sound, or if it's not making you money, or if it's not bloody bloody blah, blah, whatever it is, to feel comfort in that you being yourself and being authentic is worthwhile and actually going to give you a bit of happiness. That's, you know, that's the most important thing to try and communicate, you know. And I've been lucky enough to do that, to be able to do, you know, it's not about doing what you love, but it's, you know, I'm able to communicate and to experience these things. And it's an obligation to share it. You know, you just have to. Yeah.
I cut you off, but please keep talking about recovery part two.
Cool. Sure. So yeah. So recovery part two, recorded quite a while ago, but it's coming out now. These songs, my band and I have been playing live for the last few years. So if you've come to a show in the last 2 or 3 years, then you've definitely heard some of these songs. We're very proud of them. We're very proud of the performances. God, the band is amazing. I'm going to tell you the musicians now, so
yes,
that
please.
People can follow them, because they're all incredible in their own right.
Yeah.
So we have Sam Notman on drums, an absolute monster. He's an amazing drummer. We have Harrison Scholes on bass, who's going to be like the next Thundercat one day. We have Joe Jenkins on guitar, who's like an actual musical genius. And he plays a couple amazing guitar solos on this, on the last EP, but also mainly on this one, on Building an Army and the Teacher. He's just incredible. And then James McEwen on trumpet and percussion. And he just has such a really interesting, beautiful, diverse kind of way of playing the trumpet that I've never really heard from a trumpet player before. And so we kind of treated the trumpet more as a textural instrument rather than a solo instrument, which really lends itself to these songs. So just all the musicians, everyone's amazing at their instrument, but everyone listens to each other. You know, everyone can go wild and does go wild at certain parts, but when the music requires us all to listen and to play less, you know, everyone's so tuned in. You know, I'll cue the band often. It's not very direct structures. Usually I'll just like yell or something, but sometimes we all just get on the same wavelength anyway without that, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's some really good chemistry.
Yeah, it is. I'm very, very lucky to have them and to play with them. And I think part of that is also that they feel like they get a lot out of playing with me and playing these songs. They can grow, and I let them be creative and put their own voice in it. And that's very important for a musician to have that space, you know?
Yeah.
So Recovery Part 2 essentially kind of finishes the story that was started on Recovery Part 1, which is about recovery, as the name suggests, about healing. And kind of, you know, it was a real coincidence how I had written these songs, in some cases, like long years and years and years before, and then, you know, just in some cases less, but they were all written pre-pandemic. And how a lot of these songs are actually quite have resonated with people, you know, especially with Recovery Part 1, how some of those songs have resonated with people to do with the pandemic, and how the critiques that I had was writing about, you know, climate change and blah, 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 has actually, you know, has also kind of translated into the pandemic and what people are going through now. So I think it was quite a coincidence and quite a strange thing, to be honest, to put it out now and realize that it was more relevant now than when I wrote it without that context.
Did you find that feeling scary?
Yeah, in a way, but I also knew that it would probably hit people harder and people would be more, would find the relevance of it more because of it. I didn't want to take light of any situation, including the pandemic, like making music about it to be popular. You know, it was a coincidence that these songs, and a coincidence that the concept of healing really kind of worked as well, because I'd had that concept before. So I think, you know, now is a better time than any to think about healing and recovery.
Yeah.
And recovery and healing have different steps to them and are sometimes a messy and a slow process and a human process. And that's kind of what I wanted to reflect sonically on these EPs, was that, you know, they're quite spontaneous and raw and messy. And that's what healing can feel like sometimes. It's not an easy process. It can feel really hard, but in the end, it's a necessary one. So, yeah, in Recovery Part 2, it kind of finishes with, yeah, those kind of themes, really, which was fun to explore. And these two EPs together kind of, in a way, makes a bit of an album. But I will save my debut album for one day in the future.
You know, you wrote the music, you got with the band, you recorded the music. Did you already have your visuals in mind? So like your artwork for both EPs and also the single, did you already have that in mind? Or was that is that something that happened after the music was finished?
It happened afterwards. So the artwork and all the kind of promo shots that we did around it were taken by my partner, Sarah Willis, who's an incredible photographer and all-round creative person, artist. And we kind of came up with this concept about someone attempting to heal in a kind of a messy circumstance, in a way that, you know, is difficult to heal. And so the visuals of me by that lighthouse where there's a bridge and I'm standing there and there's waves coming over me and some of them I'm soaked. I actually went into the sea. We were trying to get some video, some photos of me in the sea on a lilo, but it was too rough. So I ended up like nearly like tripping on rocks and things. So I like,
oh gosh,
came back, but I was soaked. So we've got these photos of me like soaked in front of the warehouse. And I have a dressing gown on and a little cup of juice, and I'm like kind of, looks like I'm trying to be kind of relaxed in this quote unquote tropical environment, when in fact behind me is like a stormy sea and it's gray and it's, you know, it's going wild. So I really liked that concept that someone's trying to heal in a very kind of hectic, messy circumstance, you know, and that's how it feels sometimes to be healing, to be recovering, you know.
Yeah. I'm looking at your artwork with new eyes now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I did wonder how the cover art for As I Am, I did wonder how you didn't get washed away, because it looks like the wave is coming.
Yeah, the wave came over me. I was just holding my ground. I think I had no shoes on. I was totally wet, like totally just soaked.
Yeah.
And I remember standing there, Sarah's taking photos and I'm like, oh, when am I going to get a towel? Like, I'm freezing. But I did it for art, man.
Did it for art. And also that's quite, I don't know if this is a word, metaphorical, when you said I needed to stand my ground. It's often what you need to do when you're going through shit.
Yeah,
you need to just stand your ground. And that's, the chaos around you will eventually settle down.
Buzz, yeah, that's good observation.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so and I think another thing I want to mention before I get if I don't get the chance, is that another big part of this EP was the mixing process, because we'd had the songs for so long and I had kind of developed musically, I wanted to make sure that the songs could hold up and could be imbued with a more modern kind of me, in a way, like a where I've gotten to now. And so CJ or Saribi mixed all these songs and kind of, you know, I obviously gave him notes and stuff, but he did a really amazing job at making everything sit really nicely and feel really good, but also having some creative moments and giving more life into the performances, which was really awesome. So yeah, it was a very critical part of the process.
So for anyone listening who this is their first time making music or going through the process of making an EP, when you say you sent some notes to CJ, what did that look like, or what was that process like?
Well, CJ's like my best friend, so we have a very close relationship, and musically too, where we've made music together for a couple of years now, where we're very comfortable sharing stuff with each other. But even, you know, it's very much in the same way as if I had someone halfway across the world mixing my song, which I have done in the past, where I just listen to, so I'll give him the stems, give him the project, he'll do him first mix, I'll give him my notes, so, you know, depends on what I think, but, you know, just like, can you do this, can you do that, whatever, and then we'll go back and forth a couple times, and then we'll get the final mix, and then get that mastered. I think something I've realized, you know, because I used to have my stuff mixed by this guy called Jim McRae, who's an amazing mixing engineer and producer. He produces Jordan Rakai in UK, and he's the loveliest guy and an amazing mixing engineer. But I think there's something very important about having someone who you can kind of be in the same room with, and who's like a very good friend who you can share stuff without any kind of interruptions. You know, I think it's more important to have that now for me. Also people who are, you know, like Jim, and, you know, they have lots of other work and do lots of other things. So you have to, you know, as much as they love working with you, like I love working with Jim, but it's, you know, you gotta balance it out, I suppose.
So it sounds, that relationship sounds like a friendship first.
Which I think is really important to make music, especially if your music comes from the heart, comes from a real place. You want to have someone who gets that, who knows you, who can really understand where the music's coming from, and then build on that, you know, and help you to develop it. Rather than someone who, quote unquote, might be more professional, but they don't really, they're just a paid professional. They're not, they don't understand. And how could they? It's not saying anything bad about them. It's just they're not your friend. So they can't, you know, unless you get to know them more, which I would highly recommend. But
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. And are you able to tell us more about building an army?
Sure thing. Well, Building an Army is the first track off of Recovery Part 2. And this song, I think I wrote it in kind of beginning to middle of 2019 when I'd moved to Wellington.
Was that the first song that was written?
No, definitely not. No. It's the first song off of the EP, as in like the first track order. So the first song that was written was probably Am I the Only One Who's Walking, which was off the first EP, and that was written when I was like 16. So
that's right.
So Building an Army was written around 2019 in Wellington. And I'm quite passionate about, you know, making sure we speak true about climate change and do our part and all this kind of thing. You know, I don't think I do as much as I could. I'm not, you know, the most environmentally conscious person, but I try and do my bit in a way. And I think writing music about that stuff is really, and it's less of a, I think when I write about political stuff, I don't want it to be a kind of a preacher or a preachy thing or a lecture. I kind of want it to be an observation, and people can take it however they want to take it. It's not an order. It's more of a just an observation on how I feel like we are acting or reacting to a certain situation. So with Building an Army, it was a bit of a, excuse my French, a bit of a fuck you song, which was, you know, around the time Greta Thunberg was was, you know, getting really angry, and I just really resonated with that, how, you know, we've just not been treating this, essentially the destruction of our planet, we have not been treating it seriously. And, you know, that anger is like so well warranted, and just like, you know, that's how to be, being angry about it, about the inaction of many governments and corporations, that is the sensible way to act, I think, around climate change. And to that, for that to be downplayed is horrible. So I think with the song, it was a real like, oh man, you know, I just, you know, I'm going to put in as much effort as I can, building an army. I'm going to build an army to save this world, essentially. And so it was kind of born from a real place of grit and kind of anger in a way, which I always find, because I'm, you know, I think, I hope so, that I'm quite a go-lucky person. Like, I'm not massively sad or down, but I write some quite sad music, which in a way is my way of getting it out and expressing it and moving it out of me, kind of cathartic to me, therapeutic. So with this song, it was kind of getting out all those angry feelings just into a song, you know. And so I recorded a little demo in my room, in my, you know, cold, damp Wellington flat, and wrote the lyrics for the first verse, and had just like really like shoddy kind of electric drums. And, you know, at that point I hadn't done a lot of production. I was still working on the Watcher first EP. So that was kind of my real, real learning curve production wise. So I was still kind of learning. So it was a really kind of basic demo, but it got, I think, the essence of the song across. And then after I'd done that song, I showed it to my band and we started to play it. And I think some of the guys found it quite tricky at first, because there's some odd meters. There's like a 7/4 bar in there, and, you know, and it changes a bit, and the harmony is super weird. Like, you know, the chord progression is strange. But it was all kind of there to serve a purpose, this kind of, you know, real. And so they, you know, once we kind of started getting it, they really enjoyed it. And then for the last couple of years, we've been opening that song with all of our gigs, because it's such a great opener, because there's this, you know, atmospheric kind of improvised intro, and then, you know, and the band starts playing, and then I'm off stage, and then I get on stage, and then we go hard, you know, and go into the section, to the groove. So we recorded the song at Roundhead, and I still only had the first verse, really. Everything is live except for my vocals in the song. And also for, there's a sample at the beginning of the song, which was actually taken from the 2019 school strike for climate in Wellington that I was marching in. And I had just written the song, and I thought to myself, how cool would it be to get a little excerpt of this, of exactly what I'm trying to write about in the song? And so I did, and it's there, which I'm very proud of. I kind of cut it up and put it in the intro, underneath the band improvising and warming up, you know. Joe Jenkins, guitarist, played an amazing solo on this song, like incredible. The way he builds it, he starts really subtle and kind of mysterious, and then slowly just goes hard. And then there's lots of really fun little moments in the song. Like, there's a bit where we come out of the second chorus, and I just say, Joe, and I'm just saying to Joe, solo. So I'm just yelling at Joe, essentially. And and then he starts soloing. And I kept that in the song. It's quite subtle, but I wanted that, all that stuff there. And there's another bit where he starts to go really full on, and I'm just going, yeah, you know. And I just kept it in, because all of that, like, kind of in the moment stuff where we're just having fun is important to the storytelling and to the whole vibe of the music, you know. And so we had the song, and then I got CJ to mix it. I wrote another verse. CJ did an amazing mix on this one. And it kind of came to life, really. And yeah, I think I'm just really proud of the song. Very, very proud. Yeah.
All the songs on both EPs are just by themselves are amazing and beautiful songs.
Thank you.
But I'm sure you know that already.
Well, I don't know. You can always well, be so harsh yeah. on your harsh on your own stuff, you know. And I think a bit of being harsh is good because it, you know, you're realistic about your own limits or whatever. But you know, I'm proud of my. I'm not saying it's the best music ever made. I'm saying it's. I'm proud of the music I've made. And I think, you know, I'll probably go in a different direction in the future and we'll make different music. But the stuff I've made, I'm proud, you know, that I did it and that I, the people I've had involved, the musicians and the mixers and the whoever, you know, I'm proud of all that experience.
Mm. Yeah. You did mention that, you know, you recorded this music years back and you are in a different space now musically.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear your new music. I'm excited to hear what sort of space you're in now. If you can talk about it,
yeah, feel free sure. to. Of course. Yeah, cool. I think in a way, sonically, I'm moving further away from it all being live. You know, having these experiences with CJ, with Cerebi making First Nights, and we've got another one on the way, has been amazing because he's such an incredible producer and I've really learned a lot about production just watching him work. And we produce it together, but he does a lot of the kind of technical stuff. And so I think, you know, I want more of that in my stuff, finding a kind of a middle ground. The stuff I'm probably going to move more into is a bit darker, is a bit less kind of defined by, say, soul or neo-soul, and more kind of in a undefined genre spot in a way. I love lots of different kinds of music, and it just so happens that I started my career making kind of soul jazz stuff, but it doesn't mean I'm gonna do that for the rest of my, you know, career. Like, I'm gonna change it up and do whatever I just feel invigorated by. So it's darker, takes its time. The lyrics are kind of less literal and more kind of ambiguous and moody, and I want to get more experimental with production and with the band, and, you know, just, yeah, that seems to be, and I've written a lot of music like that. I just haven't chosen to really fully develop and share it yet. So it's going to be fun to finally do that.
Thanks so much for joining me on the Songwriter's Diary podcast and sharing your music journey with me. Before I let you go, for the people that are listening to this episode, how can they connect with you or listen to your music?
You can find my music everywhere. So Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube, whatever. Bandcamp. And if you'd like to reach out for anything, you know, Instagram or Facebook or email, please, would love to hear from you.
You were listening to The Songwriter's Diary. Special thanks to Arjuna Oates for sharing his music journey today. Please enjoy Building an Army by Arjuna Oates. Peace and love, love and light. Makuka.
it. To them, nothing's out.